Many people have type 2 diabetes, but there are several new advances in its treatment. So we're discussing what those are. Our guest, Dr. Yan Russell. She's an endocrinologist with Jamaica Hospital. This is Jamaica Hospital Med Talk, a podcast from Jamaica Hospital. Thanks for listening. I'm Joey Waller. Hi, Dr. Russell. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Joey. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So first, what's the basic difference between type 1 and 2 diabetes? And then we'll talk about how common it is for people to have type 2 diabetes.
Okay. Traditionally, diabetes divided into two types, type 1 and type 2 diabetes. And classically, type 1 diabetes is what we see most commonly in children and younger adults with lean body mass. And the etiology of the type 1 diabetes is really absolute insufficiency of insulin. Type 2 diabetes we're seeing more common in the older adults where they're more obese and they have more what we call the insulin resistance. So their body is trying hard to make more insulin to compensate the body mass index and creating a relative deficiency of insulin.
Gotcha. And so that being said, how common is type 2 diabetes in the country?
So per the most recent CDC report in the year 2022, more than 130 million adults in America have diabetes or prediabetes. And there were about 1.4 million new adult diabetes cases in the year 2019. And these are really big numbers. It's about one-third of the population of the U.S.
Wow. Big to say the least. From your experience, how much of that is due to what's controllable by us, like diet, of course?
I would like to discuss the risk factors to developing diabetes. And the number one risk factor is overweight or obesity. And following that is physical inactivity. Most of us these days are not as physically active as we were before. Older age, age of 45 years or older. And history of gestational diabetes for women or history of prediabetes and family history of diabetes. These are all contributors to developing diabetes.
So certainly genetics is part of it, right?
That's correct.
But diet is a huge factor. And so it sounds like many people that have type 2 diabetes, they really don't necessarily have to have been in that situation had they been able to alter certain things about their lifestyle, yes?
That's correct. Eating smarter and getting involved more physically with exercise, keeping yourself in shape, will really help prevent the development of diabetes.
So you mentioned one difference between diabetes 1 and 2 is age, one affecting younger people and the other as we get older, type 2. So around what age range typically will type 2 diabetes become a factor?
It's becoming more and more of a trend now that we're seeing more and more younger people with type 2 diabetes. But I would say over the age of 45 is definitely a set point where people will start seeing diabetes coming on. And this is all because of the obesity pandemic of the country right now.
And so when you say the trend is that younger people are getting it, is that, again, as we've been mentioning, because people's eating habits are not just getting worse, but getting worse at a younger age?
That's correct. I would say it was all about lifestyle choices.
So we mentioned we're talking about advances in treatment for type 2 diabetes. And let's start with something called continuous glucose monitoring, known as GCM. How do these devices work and what are the benefits compared to other monitoring?
So CGM stands for continuous glucose monitoring. This is a very small sensor underneath the skin. It takes glucose measurement day and night. The glucose readings then get transmitted to a compatible device such as a smartphone or a reader, where the patient can read their glucose numbers in real time. Comparing with the traditional glucometer method, CGM requires no finger sticks.
And how often is the information it's providing updated?
CGM checks sugars basically on a continuous basis at very frequent intervals, as frequently as every 5 minutes. So therefore, it provides a very dynamic change of your glucose profile over the entire day.
Wow. And you mentioned that it's compatible with a smartphone, as is just about everything else in our lives these days, right?
That's correct. A lot of my patients use their personal cell phone to view their CGM data, and you can actually invite up to 5 people to follow your CGM or your sugar readings throughout the day. So these people can remind you about taking medications, making better choices of your lifestyle as well.
So that's better, for instance, for older people who maybe are having memory issues, stuff like that, yes?
And also for younger kids as well.
Gotcha. Sure. Absolutely. And you mentioned the no finger sticking with this approach. And so I would imagine a lot of patients are definitely in favor of that, right?
Absolutely. So you heard it right. No more finger sticks. So me, I think that got to be the worst part of glucose control. Before CGM, the patient really literally had to prick themselves in the finger to test blood sugar level at least 4 times a day. And this is really, really not easy.
So switching gears, a new type 2 diabetes medication is GLP-1. So what are its advantages? And that's an injection, right?
That's correct. So GLP-1 stands for glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonist. So GLP-1 is not insulin. Though some of these medications are injectables, this is a common misunderstanding between the patients and the provider. These medications are not insulin because a lot of people have fear to getting onto the insulin. It is a class of medication that improves sugar level by the following 3 mechanisms. So it helps the pancreas secrete more insulin after a meal. That's number one. Number two, it delays the emptying of the food from the stomach to the gut. Number three, it decreases the release of glucose from the liver to the bloodstream. Many of the GLP-1s require only 1 injection per week.
1 injection per week as opposed to what otherwise?
Well, insulin, for instance, require either 1 injection a day or up to 4 injections a day.
So clearly a drastic difference between those two.
That's correct. Because it's taken only once a week, it reduces the medication burden for our patient. And this result in greatly improved compliance, as compliance is a very big issue with a largely self-managed chronic disease like diabetes. But it also provides a very powerful reduction of A1C.
Now, what about the connection between the GLP-1 usage and weight loss, and why is that so important for type 2 diabetics?
Weight loss is very, very important for us treating diabetes. It not only improves the physical fitness, patient will feel better about themselves, but it also decreases the overall insulin resistance. Therefore, the dosage of the insulin can be reduced. The number of pills one would need to take for diabetes can also come down as well. Therefore, I think it's better quality for the life of our patients.
Gotcha. How about something known as an SGLT2 inhibitor? How does that work, and what would you say the benefits there are compared to, say, the GLP-1 we just discussed? Boy, you've got to be familiar with a lot of acronyms to get through endocrinology, don't you, Doc?
You're right. So SGLT2 inhibitors are a class of oral medications, so it's not injectable. It stands for sodium glucose cotransporter 2 inhibitor. These class of medication improve sugar by working on the kidneys, promoting the excretion or removal of excess glucose through the urine. There are several of these medications, and they're all oral medications to be taken 1 a day.
And are there any patients in particular based on condition that this is most recommended for?
Yes. So in addition to lowering the blood sugar, these medication has proven benefit to lower the risk of future heart attack, stroke, or cardiovascular death in patients with type 2 diabetes and established cardiovascular disease. And they're also used to treat chronic kidney disease in patients with type 2 diabetes. As we know, chronic kidney disease is one of the complications of diabetes. So the SGLT2 inhibitors slow down the progression of kidney disease and help preserve kidney function over time. They provide some weight loss benefit and help lower blood pressure as well.
A couple of other things. What about potential side effects that are noteworthy for any of the treatments we just covered?
I'm glad you bring that up. To be sure, every medication has its own adverse side effects and the contraindications. Discussion with the providers is required prior to the initiation of these medication. Our endocrine team is happy to discuss the indications and potential side effects of these medication with our patient. Just give us a call.
And so in summary, you led me perfectly into my final question, which is, since there are various options, as we've talked about, what's your best advice about those seeking a new treatment for type 2 diabetes? Obviously, reaching out to a physician such as yourself and your department, that would be job one, right?
Yeah, I think diabetes management is largely self-care, but I think getting an expert opinion and having a discussion with an endocrinologist specialized in diabetes treatment will be a very important step. We would like to discuss this medication and the side effect with you so that both parties, both you and the providers, understand the medication and we know what to expect in the long run.
So basically, details on what side effects to be aware of are best discussed with an individual patient because it varies depending upon their condition.
That's correct.
Well, folks, we trust you're now more familiar with treatment advances for type 2 diabetes. Dr. Jan Russell, thanks so much again.
Thank you for having me.
And to schedule an appointment, as we discussed at Jamaica Hospital, please call 718-206-7001. Again, that's 718-206-7001. For more information about the services Jamaica Hospital offers, please visit jamaicahospital.org/podcasts. Again, jamaicahospital.org/podcasts. Now, if you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social media. And a reminder, all content of this podcast is intended for general information purposes only, not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a medical professional before adopting any of the suggestions discussed on this podcast. Hoping your health is good health, I'm Joey Waller.